Oh, maybe having him wrapped around me and screaming my name. I came up behind him, staying as quiet as I could. Intent on the popcorn, he'd not heard me come in, and I thought I'd surprise him. I wrapped my arms around his chest, pulled him against me, and raked my teeth up the side of his neck in a biting kiss. "Hey, J-baby," I murmured. "I have missed you so fucking much today it hurts. Let's go home so we can try to break another bed." Several things happened at once, nearly too quickly for me to wrap my tiny little brain around them. But my dick, sure as hell, felt the fist slamming up into it, and then my ear sang from a follow-up blow. A high-pitched screaming took up residence in my rattled hearing, and I blinked furiously, trying to wipe away the sight of Jay's face on the young woman in front of me. A popcorn bowl flew at my head, too quick for me to duck. It was a thick Fiestaware mixing bowl Jay had bought at a garage sale, and it thunked my forehead hard enough for me to see stars. Holding my hands up in surrender, I stepped back quickly to get away. That apparently wasn't good enough, because what little Jay had for dishes came flying at me in a hail of vengeance. Dodging ceramics and utensils didn't stop my brain from short-circuiting. My Jay wasn't actually Jay, and she had breasts. Round, soft curves I'd pressed up against my arms when I hugged her from behind. I was ducking away from a coffee cup when Jay came running from the back room. He let the mug fly past us both, but stood in front of me to ward off anything else she decided to throw. They both stood a few feet from each other, screaming loudly in a fast Korean I hadn't a snowflake's chance in hell of understanding. But the one thing I did see was the color drain from Jamin's face when she spat at my feet. There are times in life when a person can only stand still and let the raging rivers pour over them. This was one of those times for me. Jay would have had to be blind to miss the evidence of my rubbing up against the young woman, who looked so much like him. Her neck boasted a red scrape from my teeth, and the shallow scruff of my unshaven jaw. It was obscene to see an intimate visual of what I had meant to do to my lover marbling the skin of a woman. She was only a few inches shorter than he was, apparently not enough of a difference for me to notice in my need to put my arms around Jay. The beauty of Jay's face seemed oddly strong on a woman's features, and her black hair was razor-chopped around her face and neck, much like his. The clothes were definitely ours. I had peeled them off of him enough times to know them intimately, even down to the small tear under the right sleeve where my tongue fit perfectly to tease his upper arm. The sight of her breasts beneath the fabric was disconcerting, nearly as disturbing as the thought of me sliding my hands over her stomach when I'd leaned over to kiss who I thought was my lover.
"You kissed me."
Her nostrils flared, and the realization of who I'd meant to kiss finally sank in. Her eyes widened, and she paled to an ashen gray.
"Oppa, you meant to kiss J-Oppa."
"Fuck, you're his sister." There was nothing else I could do, other than maybe find a corner to noisily throw up in. Fucking hell. Shit. Jay, I'm sorry, I didn't know. I had just outed Jay to a member of his family, and she was less than happy about the discovery.
"Kill! Faggot!"
It was a hard word to hear, especially coming out of a mouth so close to Jay's in shape. The sting of her words burrowed in deep, striking fears I thought I'd spackled over.
"Don't come near my brother. Oppa, how can you be this with him?"
Jay's scowl tightened and his Korean took on a pleading tone as he gestured with his hands between us. She returned his beseeching words with a stream of words, so laden with disgust I could feel my stomach turn. The look she gave me should have withered me to an ashen pile, if not for Jay standing in front of me to take the brunt of it.
"Augie."
I touched his shoulder, and Jay flinched, pulling away from my hand. It hurt. More than the bullets Ben ripped through me and Rick turning cold in my arms. Got even more than Claudia's blood spilling from her body and leaking out between my fingers. Jay taking that tiny step away from me opened up a chasm between us I couldn't kiss away. My face went numb, and my limbs were stiff, unwieldy lumps of clay, unwilling to budge me from my spot. They continued to fight, a maelstrom of words cutting deep down into my bones, even though I didn't understand a single thing either of them said. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered. Nothing but the devastated, broken look on Jay's face and the achingly harsh curses from his sister's mouth. "Jay. Baby. Don't. Hyung." Jay turned to me.
"Please. Hyung? This Iban, and you call him Hyung?"
She was off on another tear, and the gap between them closed. Her hands, small and delicate, were curled into tight fists, and she struck out with them, catching Jay across the cheek. A sound of flesh hitting skin seemed to shock her, and his sister suddenly stilled, then burst out, crying.
"Tifa, listen to me."
My lover tentatively clasped his sister's shoulder, pulling her into a tight hug. She fought him, refusing to be comforted, and he reluctantly let her go, steering her toward the back of the studio.
"Go wash up. We can talk more. Please, let me talk to Cole. I need to say a few things."
It was a struggle, with warring emotions playing over her face and her taut body. After a searing few seconds, Tiffany walked away, looking over her shoulder at me. When she reached the end of the bookcase wall, Tiffany stopped and bit her lip. It was a gesture I'd seen Jay do so many times, and it ached when I thought I might never again be able to kiss away the dimples his teeth made.
"You did this to him,"
Tiffany spat.
"You made him like this. Why? Why did you do this? How could you take him away from us?" "He didn't take me away,"
Jay protested, but I cut him off, not even thinking before I spoke. "I love him." The words slithered from me and wrapped around her before I could stop them. "I just love him." She visibly looked sickened, and took a step toward her brother, perhaps to pull him away from me, to yank him back to the safety of their family and their beliefs. Shaking her head, Tiffany replied,
"No, you can't love him. Men can't love other men, not really. What you do is sick. You need to leave my brother alone."
"Let me deal with this, Tiff," Jay urged. "Go take a shower. I need to talk to Cole."
Tiffany disappeared behind the shelves, and the sound of the bathroom door slamming put a final stab wound into the corpse of my heart. Jay stood in front of me, a brittle, lithe statue of ivory, jet, and pain.
"Jay."
My fingers nearly skimmed his mouth before he stepped back.
"Don't."
He shook his head.
"If you touch me, I think I will break. Don't. I didn't mean to do this."
I drew close enough for him to feel my heat.
"I never wanted this. Not. Jay, you've got to believe me. I never wanted to do this to you. I thought she was you from behind. She looks. Just go. Go."
He put his hands up to push me away, but didn't trust himself to make contact.
Just, please go.
So, this is it? Between us? This time I refused to be shoved aside by his anger and pain. I wrapped my arms around him and held him as close as I could. My heart broke with every straining push he gave me to get away. Jay, I can't lose you. Not like this, not over something like this.
You're not losing me. Maybe. I don't know. I need time to... I don't know what I need, but right now it is not you.
He took a small step back, putting a bit of distance between us. It was the length of a knife, and the space thrust into me, cutting at my guts and severing a burning line through my heart.
Cole, you don't know how hard it is for me to love you,
he murmured, tilting his head to the side so I couldn't see his expression.
I can't give you everything.
You think I don't know that? My pain crumbled under a wave of anger. He wasn't saying anything I didn't already know. And there's always a part of you I can't touch. I thought I'd waited out that you'd give me enough time to touch every part of you, everything inside of you, but even when I'm inside of you, you're holding back. Don't do that now. Don't pull back from me when I can help you, when I can be with you.
Be with me? How? When your kisses burn my skin? Have I told you that? What I'm doing is wrong, and I keep hoping inside of me that something will happen to make it feel right. I need this to feel right, Ko'a.
Jay turned and stared me down.
Everything you do to me is like a poison I need inside of me. Something sweet that peels me apart until my bones ache from the cold air around me. Every time you touch me, when your hands are on me, I want to cry and pull away because I want it so much.
I don't understand what you're saying, baby. I couldn't touch him. It would shatter what little hold I had on myself.
You're an addiction I can't fall into, Ko'a.
His accent curled around his words, softening their tones but sharpening the blow to my soul.
You wanted the truth? The truth is I cannot love you as much as you love me. I can't rip myself open for you to feed on, as much as I want to. I know that if I do, I'll be lost. I begged you to make love to me without anything between us because I thought maybe if we did, I'd finally be able to break away. The feel of you filling me might be enough for me to finally satisfy what I want from you. But I know deep in my heart it would just make me want you more.
Don't do this to us, Jay. Shock ran through me, sucking the marrows from my bones.
Don't you see, Aggie?
Jay whispered.
There is no us. There is you, and then there is me. We are so different. We want different things. Maybe it was stupid for me to dream that we could be an us. Where will it leave me? Like Scarlet Nuna, alone and unwanted when she's older? I don't want that. I don't know if I love you enough to make it worth a lonely death. You need to walk away from me now, Ko'a. You need to walk out that door and not come back. Not for a while. Maybe not ever.
In that moment, I knew what love was. It was walking away from the man in front of me. It was turning my back on the man I had made cry out my name and beg for more of me inside of him. I needed to turn away because he asked it of me, whether I wanted to or not, because I loved him. I was supposed to step back into the shadows and fade from his view.
If that's what you need, baby, I'll give you anything you need. I need to think, Cole. Please, give me some time. Let me talk to her. I need to figure things out. It wiggled free from my arms, putting distance between us.
Can you keep Nico? I don't think she'd be happy here.
I'll keep the damn cat! He winced at the volume of my voice. I was too close to breaking. I'm going to keep you, damn it. I am not letting you go.
You have to. Even if it's just for now, ne?
He moved quickly to the door and opened it to the bright sunshine that refused to chase off the cold inside me.
I will call you. I promise. I don't know when, but I will. Please go, before Tiffany calls my mother and makes things worse.
Brushing past him, I stole a quick kiss, lingering for a moment on his mouth before he could push me away again. I love you, Jay. If you have to choose, please choose to let me love you. I'll wait. As long as you need me to, I will wait.
I don't know if you should, but I'm glad you're going to.
He closed his eyes, shutting them against the anguish I'd put there. Pushing me out the door, he whispered,
Sarange ko'a.
And then the door shut behind me, a solid sound firm enough to shatter my heart into a thousand pieces. Chapter 7. I didn't remember driving home. The road was a blur, and the city around me a mosaic of colored squares and grayed-out faces. I blinked and found myself in the carport, the Rover's engine still running. The car lights caught on the green dumpster, and I turned them off, but bright orbs remained in my vision when I blinked. Evening had fallen, sucking all of the light from the day sky. I knew exactly how the sky felt. The cat didn't greet me at the door, and there was no black shadow on the stairs, but I could feel her presence in the house. From the faint whiff of tuna in the air and the mostly empty bowl on the kitchen floor, she'd eaten the offering I'd laid out for her earlier and was probably now sleeping it off in a deep food coma. That was fine with me. I had other things on my mind besides coddling Jay's damned cat. A full bottle of Jack Daniels sat waiting for me in the cupboard, a leftover from a party we'd thrown. I pulled it out and stumbled to the couch. The seal barely cracked when I twisted the cap, so I scraped it open until it tore. A cap flew off somewhere near the apothecary chest we used as a coffee table, and I left it where it fell. After dragging my phone from my pocket, I tossed it onto the chest's flat top and stared at the screen. There was an ache inside me, a burgeoning need to hear his voice, even if he was only going to tell me to fuck off. Anything to ease the growing empty hunger that seemed to be eating me from the inside out. I picked up the whiskey and began my journey to the bottom of the bottle. The world was sideways, skewing the ceiling to the right of me. The fireplace sat cockeyed on the wall, and whoever turned the sun on was definitely a Spinal Tap fan because it was dialed up to 11. At some point, I wasn't sure when, my stomach had crawled out of my body and rolled around in dog vomit. Loyal to a fault, it then flopped its way back, sliding over my lips to return to where it came from. The damn thing left its foul trail on my tongue and throat. Regardless of when, I could still taste its foul journey, and burped up the remains of its night out. Strangely enough, the room was also jiggling, and something was grabbing me by the armpits.
Come on, princess, let's get you in a shower.
I knew that voice, and hated it instantly. It taunted me often in my daily life, usually at the expense of my legs while running, or my face when we were in the boxing ring. I'm sure my brain formed something intellectual and scathing, but
but the message got garbled on its way to my mouth, and instead of the withering, sarcastic reply I knew I could deliver, I croaked,
Fuck you.
The trip upstairs to my bedroom was akin to following a white rabbit down a hole. Things got larger, then smaller again with each jarring stumble against a step. My shins were singing a lament by the time we reached the landing, and my head began its own chorus, complete with pounding hammers and a full range of percussion. The last time I'd heard a bass line this deep, it had been while working patrol in the Fashion District, where there was a free hip-hop concert with every passing car.
"Why are you here?"
I'm sure that was what I said, but the confusion on Bobby's face would have been priceless, if I could have seen it clearly. I tried again, enunciating carefully. It didn't make much of a difference. For all of my trying, it still sounded like I was playing the kazoo under 50 feet of water.
"Ah, come on, dude, give me a break," Bobby pleaded with me. "Let's get you into a shower, then we can see if I've got to take you to the hospital for alcohol poisoning."
I opened my mouth to object vehemently to the idea that I was drunk, but my belly had other ideas. Probably overfull from its midnight crawl, it began to gurgle, warning me of its impending discourse. Bobby's arms tightened around my midsection, and I suddenly found myself staring down into a bowl of bluish water, the stink of chemicals burning my nose. I didn't have much of a chance to object. Within seconds of being flung toward the toilet, my belly emptied itself of its foul mess, turning the water a sickly green. The liquid deserved to be regarded until I could find the exact phrase to describe its distinct color. This task was made difficult because my innards continued to add to its hue, diluting the crayon blue to varying shades of chartreuse and whiskey. Behind me, the shower blasted on, and I winced at the pain upon hearing the spray hitting the tiles. My clothes were disappearing at a rapid rate, and the bathroom floor was fucking cold under my bare ass. Trying to change positions didn't help, because it only brought the damn tile into contact with my sack. I made a dignified noise to protest this icy assault, but Bobby only heard a whimpering moan. If I thought the tile was cold, nothing prepared me for the shock of glacial proportions when he picked me up and threw me into the shower. With all of the faucet heads turned on, I couldn't escape the frigid blasting, and the glass door refused to budge when I pushed against it. Blinking, I saw Bobby had knotted one of my ties around the handle, and a nearby towel ring, effectively trapping me inside. I gave in to the inevitable, and let the shower pound the stink out of my flesh. Unfortunately, cleanliness is next to sobriety, and by the time my skin no longer smelled like Lynchburg, I remembered Jay breaking my heart. The water felt even colder on my face, especially when my eyes were hot with tears. Fucking son of a bitch. It hurt. Somewhere deep inside me, the pain grew, frothing up into a geyser of anguish that choked the air from my lungs. The last time I had felt so desolate, Mike had been holding my hand and telling me of Rick's death. That's how Bobby found me, curled into a ball and screaming for the broken pieces of my heart to quit stabbing my chest. A couple of hours later, I was sitting up in my bed, cupping my hands around my third cup of hot black coffee while Nico played Hunt the Toes across my bedsheets. She'd scored a few hits, nearly drawing blood from my big toe, but the taste of her kill didn't seem to satisfy her, and she continued to dance across the end of the bed, viciously attacking my feet. I felt good to have her, something tangible of Jay's life to hold on to, while I made sense of my crumpled life. Bobby sat down on the bed next to me. He'd given up trying to get me to eat something, but I'd eagerly accepted the coffee. My face hurt from crying, and I was fairly certain I'd engraved tile patterns into my knees from my time in the shower. Leaning in close, he raised his hand, and I flinched, earning a reproachful look.
"Why would I hit you?"
he grumbled, sliding his fingers over my scalp. The contact felt good, good enough to make me start purring, and it eased the aching tenderness in my skull. Maybe because every time your hand comes near my face, it's got a glove on it, I reminded him between sips of coffee. My mood dipped again, wallowing in the shallows of my despair.
What made you come over?
Jay called me.
I must have looked shocked because Bobby left off his petting to kiss my cheek.
Huh.
I tried not to let jealousy cloud my judgment, but I failed miserably.
What the fuck was he doing calling you?
Because he loves you and he's worried about you.
For a best friend, Bobby seemed to forget whose side he was supposed to be on.
He did some time, Cole. His sister showing up out of the blue fucked him up.
Didn't do me much good either, I pointed out.
You didn't do him any favors kissing her.
But she was wearing my clothes in his house. I thought it was him. From behind, she even smelled like him. Who the hell would think it wasn't Jay? My voice broke and I looked away, not trusting my temper any further. Another sip of coffee and I could breathe again, the ache rolling back to a dull roar. What am I supposed to do now? How the hell am I supposed to do shit without him?
Did he say you two were over? Did he tell you not to come back? Did he kill that fucked up forever you've got going on in your head?
Bobby asked softly.
Because he told me he just asked for time. He needs to deal with his sister running away from home and finding out that he's gay. That is a lot of crap on his plate right now.
He's supposed to ask me to help eat the crap off his plate, I murmured. Not shove me away from the table. We're in this together. He promised me that, Bobby. He promised he'd stand by me in all of my crap, but when it's his shit, I'm supposed to keep on dancing without him? That's fucked up. That's not what I want.
That's what he wants, he reminded me.
It was a harsh reality, and one I was choking on.
So, what are you going to do?
Sobriety sucked. Nearly as much as heartache, but burning my body with whiskey didn't seem like it was going to last. Sooner or later, I was going to run out of whiskey, and I could only hope Bobby didn't run out of patience before then, or I'd have no one to throw me in the shower.
Grow some balls, boy, and answer me,
Bobby growled.
What are you going to do?
I guess I have to give him some time. I sighed. I just hope he comes back to me, dude, because right now I feel like Ben just came back to finish me off.
You survived that, kid.
The bed dipped when Bobby grabbed me, his arms choking me into a tight hold.
You can survive this. No matter what happens between you, you can survive it, and I'll be with you every step of the way.
It took me a few days to get back on my feet. I wavered between leaving Jay sappy love poems on his voicemail to removing the battery from my phone so I would stop leaping every time it rang. After leaving a gone fishin' sign on the office door, I called Claudia's oldest to tell him whichever kid he was sacrificing to the altar of familial duty was off the hook for a few days. The volcano was set on pause, and I'd be resuming tossing virgins into the fiery pits of hell in a little bit. Mike called, a lot, and I shoved off any discussion about Jay, Ichiro, and the price of tea in China. Instead, we talked about silly things and what Maddie was up to. Our younger sister had left to go home a week ago, and she emailed often, claiming she missed us and wanted to live in Los Angeles. Mike and I both knew that once school started, she'd be into the thick of classes and popularity contests, and we'd be a far distant second to a new pair of skinny jeans. There was even a phone call to Madame Sun, giving her a short update on what I'd been up to. I didn't get into Gyeongsi poaching on her territory, or my suspicions that her rival, or Yun Jun Lee's husband, could have had a hand in his wife's death. Mostly I reassured her that I was looking into things, and she didn't seem to be cursed. I'd spoken to everyone I knew, except the one man that I loved the most. Instead of wallowing, I did the stupidest thing I have ever done in my entire life. I cleaned. Like, crazy cleaning. Pulling all the furniture from the walls and vacuuming kind of cleaning, and then going through the fridge to toss out mustard bottles I've never opened. By the time I was done, the place smelled like Pine Sol and my body hurt in places I'd only gotten to ache after some intense sexual acrobatics. There were tears. I was man enough to wait until I was in the shower, and the smell of Jay's soap on me grew too much for me to handle. My body hurt from the pain bubbling up in my belly, and I bent over, letting it ride through my skin and bones until I couldn't breathe anymore. It happened every time I took a shower, but I wasn't strong enough to not step into my self-imposed glass prison and smear my lover's scent over my own skin. I slept in his sweats, washed his laundry, and put his clothes neatly away in the drawers I'd emptied for him. I ate kimchi, only to have the spiciness of his after-dinner kisses on my mouth. His cat lay with me on the bed, and we both curled up on Jay's side, stealing each other's warmth. At my darkest moment, I picked up my phone and texted Sarang-hae to his phone. Just that, nothing more. I knew what it meant. I'd known it since the first time I'd heard it leave his lips, even though I didn't understand a damned word of Korean. I just needed him to know that my heart was his, even as I reeked of cleaning solution and sweat. Every fucking piece of my heart was his to hold. I could do nothing but wait and clean. About a week later, after I'd showered and collapsed onto the couch, Nico crawled out from where she'd been hiding and flopped onto my lap, obviously worn out from her lengthy battle with dust bunnies. From the smell of her breath, she'd found the wet food I'd left out for her in the kitchen, and after a few headbutts against my arm, she flopped over onto her side and squeaked, demanding a belly rub. It was about all my body could deliver, and I scritched at her fur, firing up her soft, purring rumble. "Okay, cat. Time to do something other than take apart my house." I opened my laptop, called up Madame Sun's files, and went over the details of the case. The last thing I wanted to do was dig through someone else's problems. I longed to wallow in the mud I'd made from my tears and the ashes of my heart. I wanted to swear until my voice was cracked and rough, using up every cuss word I knew. But I'd already done that, and nothing had changed. My phone was still bereft of Jay's silky voice, and my bed was dead cold by the time I stumbled up to it. "The woman's nuts. The fortune teller. You know that, right, Neek?" I spoke to the cat's twitching belly. "Why the hell would someone be killing off her clients? And why the hell do I give a shit?" The cat, of course, had no opinion, other than giving me a dirty look for pausing in mid-rub. Disgusted by my lack of attention, she lifted her leg up to begin another epic grooming session. Still, two definite victims and a guy dying of a heart attack. Did someone help him with that? A gun to the head could trigger a pretty good panic. Someone killed Mei Choi and Yu Jun Lee. Question is, was it the same person? I murmured, "Unless you're me, getting shot at doesn't happen every day. As God fucking knows, I'm getting shot at like it's hunting season and I'm dressed like Duck Dodgers." I couldn't put my finger on what was nagging me about the case. It was cut and dry. People died from violence, especially if they were in the wrong place at the right time. Bobby hadn't gotten back to me about any domestic calls to the Lee's place, but admittedly, neither one of us had been thinking about the alleged conspiracy against Madame Sun and her clients. I'd have to wait for something more concrete before I started flinging poo at Young Si. The guy made my skin crawl. He was a part of this mess. I just needed to find out how. Ah, fuck it. I closed the laptop. Well, time to start poking my nose into other people's shit. Since we don't have a butler in the mix, Neek, let's start with the next best thing. The assistant. There wasn't enough time for me to not think of Jay, but I needed to fill my brain with something else. If I didn't do something soon, I'd do something crazy, like go over and make love to him on the kitchen counter, or worse, finish off what Ben had started on me. I found Vivian Na's phone number and grabbed my abandoned cell phone from its charger. Turning it on was a mistake, one of the many I'd made over the past few years of my life. It flared to life and proceeded to scold me about my missed messages and calls. None of them were Jay, so I ignored them all, punching in Na's number. She answered on the second ring with a lilting Korean-flavored voice made for selling sex. When I identified myself, her dulcet tones flattened to a chilled professionalism I admired so much. I'd have hired her if I hadn't already been missing Claudia's brassy nosiness. Madam Sun had told her to expect a call from me, but I could hear the irritation in her voice. No, Ms. Na wasn't very happy to hear from me at all.
"I don't see what I can do for you, Mr. McGinnis."
She clipped her words off, forming them out, then snipping them closed.
"I told Madam Sun we had nothing to do with the murders. They're just coincidences."
Once is a coincidence, but two is a bit sketchy. I just want your thoughts, even if it's just to ease Madam Sun's mind. The way I was stalking Sun's discomfort up with nearly everyone I spoke to, people were going to start chasing after her with a butterfly net. Maybe we could meet up someplace, talk over a cup of coffee, and then I'll be out of your hair for good. Her sigh was heavy enough to drag down a Zeppelin if she'd been in one. But giving in, she rattled off an address.
"I'll be there in half an hour. Can you make it by then? I'm supposed to meet someone for dinner, but there's a bakery nearby. We can have coffee or something."
Yeah. I can do that in half an hour," I said, glancing at the clock. I would have to take surface streets. Thankfully, the address was in Koreatown, not downtown, because by the time I fought my way out to the 101, down the freeway, and back across Wilshire, she would have enough time to eat a 7-course meal and watch an opera before I got there. I left Nico in deep contemplation of her toes, grabbed the keys to the Rover, and headed down Rossmore toward Wilshire. Turning left onto 6th, I was surprised to find a long line of cars waiting to be valet parked. I checked my wallet for some cash, and handed control of the Rover over to a smirking kid who barely looked old enough to have been weaned, much less responsible for my car. Sending a prayer of gratitude to my insurance company, I found the cafe Vivian spoke of. It was more of a coffee and hookah cafe than a bakery, despite what the sign said. Situated among other Korean restaurants and clubs in an enclosed, courtyard-like building, the place did a brisk business. With its outer windows on the street, the cafe entrance faced the interior driveway, cutting out most of the district's traffic noise. The place's glass-encased outside seating was nearly overflowing with packs of young Asians, and I had to shoulder past a group of frill-headed young men, their thick black hair cut short and shaved down the sides to form a thick brush. I wasn't certain when the Roman centurion look had come back into vogue, but they were fiercely clinging to its style. None of the men looked enough like Jay to tug at my guts, but a few were handsome enough to earn a second glance. I didn't take that second glance. My insides were dead, and when they began to playfully chatter in Korean, it was enough to make me heartsick. I missed hearing that language. It was all I could do to push through the heavy doors and head inside. It was then I realized I had no idea what Vivian Na looked like. Luckily, she spotted the uncomfortable, confused Sasquatch blundering around in the herd of lithe, nubile young Koreans and waved me over. Vivian was nothing I expected. Where Madame Sun was the stereotype of a Korean grandmother, her assistant looked as if she could be strolling down the runways of Paris, swinging her bony hips to sell outrageously expensive clothing. Sleek could not describe her well enough, from her prominent cheekbones to the razor-sharp bob framing her delicate face. Vivian Na oozed high maintenance and expensive trysts. Draped in what had to be designer clothes, she wore them carelessly, her body a sensual slither as she crossed the short distance between us to shake my hand. Her fingers were cold, brushing the plump of my palm. I felt the scrape of her nails briefly on my skin, a light scoring most men would probably equate with sex and the bite of her manicure into their backs. The brief smile on her coral-painted mouth went no further than her lips, and anything she might have said to me was lost in the hail of gunfire and the windows shattering behind me. Grabbing her did no good. Her body was hot, slick with blood and full of holes, and I was left with the remains of her face splattered all over my chest. Chapter 8. The shooting was nearly over before it truly began to sink into my head. There is a long moment where the brain can't quite catch up to what's happening. The loud, pounding booms nearby, the screams of people, and then the smell of blood. Nothing makes the brain freeze over more than the smell of human blood in the air. Even if someone had never smelled that much human blood before, the brain knows it's been spilled. The small remains of a primal lizard consciousness perk up and is ready to scatter at the scent of its species' own blood. It sticks to nostril hairs, and for a long panicked moment the brain wonders if the blood it's sucking in belongs to its own meat suit. That's usually when the screaming starts, either because the pain hits or the terror that it might. But most of all, it's because blood is all you can taste, and you drown in it, trying to find some dark corner where the chaos can't reach you. I couldn't save Vivian Na. She was gone before I'd taken another breath. But I could drag a terrified young woman under the table. Her friend was silent, sobbing into her own hands, and I reached through the noise and flying glass, snagging her around the waist to drag her to safety. She fought me, raking my bare arms with her long nails, slicing me open. I bled. Shallow scratches of pinkish water. Nothing like the ocean of red spreading out around us. The gunshots were only whistling echoes in my eardrums, leftover burns among the continuing screams. Fear grew to horror, and the crying began. The woman I'd pulled under the table included. Keeping my head down, I scrambled to my feet and nearly stepped on a slender young Korean man clutching his leg, blood seeping slowly from his fingers. My side argued with me, the muscles twisting around their captured nerves and scar tissue. Spasms dug their claws in deep, and I had to huff my breath to ease away the pain. It fucking hurt, but probably not as much as the burning hole through the kid's thigh. "Hey, okay, it'll be okay." Any thought of going anywhere but right to his side was gone. The blood wasn't spurting, but the bleed was constant. I grabbed a few of the linen napkins from the table and gently peeled his hands back. His jeans were soaked through, and I pressed down on the wound, staunching the flow as best I could. He blinked, and I swallowed, caught by the pain on his face. He looked nothing like my lover, but all I could think about was Jay. I'd done this once, pressing my cold fingers to Jay's broken skin to hold his blood in. Hopefully I'd have the same luck with the kid as I did with Jay then. The ashen clamminess on his skin was normal, I told myself, and one of the women I'd yanked aside crawled over to touch my arm.
Is it over?
She was shaking, shock ripping through her as brutally as the bullet tore through the young man I was pressing down upon.
Are we okay?
Yeah, you're fine. I nodded over to the other woman. See how she's doing. Dial the cops if you can. We're gonna need some help down here. I needn't have bothered telling her to call 911. Sirens were cutting through the air before she crawled back under the table to retrieve her phone. A few feet away, Vivian Na's body cooled, her life turning the floor sticky as people ran through her pooling blood to get to the door.
Why did they do this? Were they trying to kill us? Is she dead?
The they she was talking about was obvious. Whoever held that gun was the enemy. Her phone bobbed in her hands, and she clenched her fingers tight around the case to stop her own trembling. The boy moaned, and in another scenario, I'd have been happy to hear that tortured sound. But it wasn't Jay beneath me, and the harsh sounds weren't ones of pleasure. I don't know. Admitting ignorance wasn't a sign of weakness, it merely showed me what I needed to do to solve the tangled situation dumped in my lap. But I'm going to find out. There wasn't any going back to save Vivian Nah. As I pressed down on the kid's leg, I realized I'd never even heard her speak in person, much less found out if she knew anything about the Madame Sun murders. The shooting had come through the outer windows. The cafe's interior lit up like a carnival sideshow. It had been the perfect setup. Outside on the street, we'd have all been sitting ducks. Someone wanted to silence her. While others had been hit by stray bullets, the majority of the shots were meant for her, rending her apart. What the hell did you know, Vivian? I turned to look at her body. What was so fucking dangerous you had to die for it?
Are you sure you're not a lawyer, McGinnis?
Wong shot me an exasperated look.
Because you seem to show up around dead bodies more than an ambulance chaser.
Wait, she got dead after I got here. I'd been accused of being macabre before, but never a lawyer. Actually, I wasn't sure if I was offended or not.
Her name is Vivian Nah. She's Madame Sun's assistant. I was meeting her here to ask her a few questions about Choi and Lee.
And she happened to be the one fatality in the shooting?
I think she was the target of the shooting. Everyone else was just collateral damage.
Got any evidence of that?
No, just a feeling, I said, shrugging.
I can't take a feeling to court, McGinnis. How about if you talk to me about what happened when you got here?
Wong arrived a few seconds after the blue throng, chugging through the courtyard in a Crown Vic battered enough to be in the demolition derby. Someone on the bottom of the food chain secured us both coffee, and Wong pulled me aside to grill me once it got around I'd been there to meet the victim. Vivian Nah was no longer a name. She'd become the victim, and depending on the detective who caught her case, she'd either remain a faceless number on a homicide report, or her murderer would be an unholy grail the cop couldn't shake free. Luckily for Vivian, she got the latter in Detective Dexter Wong.
It's not much to tell. Honestly, she never even had a chance to speak to me except for over the phone. We touched hands, and then she went down.
And you called her because she's Madame Sun's assistant? What were you thinking she could tell you?
Well, I was going to see if she knew Lee was seeing Gyeong-si, or if Choi's related to him.
The splash of Vivian's blood on me was drying. One of the crime scene people took pictures of the spray, and there was some talk of taking my shirt with them for evidence.
There's bad blood between him and Sun. I'm looking for something to connect the chain of events. Sun believes someone's targeting her clients.
What do you believe?
Wong drew me out, looking up from his notes.
Come on, tell me you can't see this is all stitched up into Madame Sun, I ventured.
First Choi, then Lee, now Vivian Nah. All of them have some connection to Sun.
Well, there's definitely a connection,
he grunted at me and stabbed my aching side with a bony finger. But you're going to step away from it and let me do my job. If there is something fucked up going on, I'll find it. You agreed, remember?
She died right in front of me, Dex.
Pursing my lips, I stared at the cafe's shattered windows.
Fuck, she probably died because of me.
The entire world doesn't revolve around you, McGinnis, Wong retorted. But in case it does, let's go over what she said to you on the phone.
It wasn't a lot. Our conversation had been brief and to the point. Meeting me was something she was resigned to do, not something she'd sought out. I didn't have much to give Wong other than Na's general irritation at having to start her night later than she'd expected. I knew exactly where she'd been headed after talking to me,
and Wong took down what little I had to add on his tiny brown notebook. Clicking his pen, Wong sighed at his spare scribbles. Are we still on for that dinner? Yeah, about that. I scratched at the back of my neck. Jay and I are, taking a break. Well, Jay's taking a break. I'm learning how to deal with it. Good break or a bad break? He shifted closer, keeping his voice down. It seemed like an odd place to be having a bonding session with a newly minted friend, but sometimes I just had to take my special moments where I could get them. Is he just busy, or did shit happen? Kind of shit happening. Swallowing, I found a chunk of my pain lodged in my throat. His sister showed up out of the blue. I kind of outed him. Fuck, that's a bad one. Wong whistled under his breath. Asian families are weird, you know? When I was in high school, my mom kept throwing Chinese girls at me. And then she was happy if the girl was Asian. Now she's just thrilled if the girl's got a pulse and I don't pay her by the hour. I'm pretty sure by the time I hit 40, she'll take anything with a womb, even if she's got, you know, 3 boobs and shaves twice a day. Somehow I don't think I'm ever gonna fit into that timeline there, Wong. I smirked ruefully. Jay's family's never going to be happy he's with a guy. Probably not, but hang in there, he shrugged. Don't you think they just want him to be happy? They should, but I don't know if that's high on anyone's priority list but mine. Nodding my chin over toward my rover, I frowned at the strips of yellow tape blocking off the courtyard's driveways. Am I going to be able to get out of here? Yeah, about that. Wong glanced apologetically at my trapped car. You got enough money on you for a cab? I ended up calling that cab. The driver was a former Long Island native who regaled me with what was wrong with Los Angeles and why New York was better. I asked him how long he'd been in L.A., and he told me 15 years. Since he looked to be in his mid-20s, I wasn't going to put much stock into his opinion of the Big Apple versus Tinseltown. He wasn't old enough to have seen anything other than his grandmother's backyard and possibly a few playgrounds. During the slow drive out of Koreatown, I learned he was a vegan and was studying to be an actor. He was about to get into the reasons method acting was the true form of his craft when we pulled up in front of my place. I tossed him what I had in my wallet and listened to his grumbling of a small tip before he drove away. Rolling my eyes in the plumes of exhaust he'd left behind, I dug my house keys out and headed up the walk. The scent of pizza from the Italian restaurant down the street made my mouth water, and I checked the time. I could maybe be lazy enough to get them to deliver a Chicago-style pie. As soon as I spotted the woman waiting for me on my front stoop, I debated turning around and ordering a pizza in person. Maybe even eating it on a train to New York, because, hey, the cabbie sounded pretty convincing, and I should at least check things out before making up my own mind. I would have, if I wasn't damn certain she'd run me down like she was a cheetah and I a tasty gazelle. Nice legs, I said, eyeing Maddie's blades. Did you run here on those, or did you stash your car someplace because you knew I would book it as soon as I saw it? I parked in the back. Since you were out, I took a run. I've got my norms with me so I can change them out. My sister-in-law studied my face. There couldn't have been much to see under the 100-watt bulb in my porch light, but whatever she saw there made her frown. Is that blood? It's not mine. Ultimately, they had taken my shirt, but my hands were still marbled with blood. No wonder the cab driver thought I was sketchy. Even wearing the old gym shirt I'd had in my rover, I looked like an extra from Sweeney Todd. Eh, he'd definitely deserved a larger tip. Let me in so I can yell at you. Do you have to? I unlocked the door and grabbed the soft case she used for her prosthetics. Oh, shit, these are heavy. How do you walk in these? Good leg muscles. I can crack a walnut with my thighs. That's why I usually wait until I'm having sex with your brother before I start talking about things I want for the house. One wrong word, I can pop his weenie like a grape. I really didn't need that in my head. Putting the case in the living room, I said a quick hello to Nico, who peeked down from the landing to see who came in. Dissatisfied with the present humans, she ducked back into whatever black hole she'd come from. You want something to drink? I don't know what I have. Whatever's cold, Maddie called out from the couch. Did you eat yet? I was gonna get a pizza, I admitted, handing her a chilled bottle of homestyle root beer. Do you want to stay for a slice, or is this a screaming at my head going to be quick?
Pizza would be nice.
She had gotten her blades off and was packing them up into sleeves. And no, I probably won't be quick. Mike had always had a fondness for tall, pretty blondes. He'd scored when Maddie gave him the time of day. Even barefaced and slightly dewy from a light run, she was a beauty. One that could kick my ass 5 ways from Sunday, but still gorgeous. With her strong Norwegian features and powerfully lithe body. If I'd been straight, I'd have been terrified to ask her out. She was that far out of my league. I could only admire my brother's brass ones for thinking he even had a chance with her, much less begging her to marry his sorry, uptight ass. The Italian place had a deep dish, sausage, mushroom, and garlic, someone ordered but didn't pick up. $5 plus tip, and it was mine. They'd even warm it up for me. I'd barely come back from the cleaning up when the skinny kid doing the deliveries was at my door with a slightly steaming pizza, dripping with cheese and a cocky smile that earned him a $10 tip. I'd given the cab driver less, but he didn't wiggle his ass in glee when I handed the money Maddie fronted me. I served Maddie on a paper plate and dug a slice out of the box to chew on. She studied the pizza, then shrugged, leaning forward to pick it up for a bite. Cheese gushed out of her mouth, and she laughed, shoving strings of it back in with the back of her hand.
"This is like battle pizza,"
Maddie said around another bite. Nestling back into my couch, she wiggled her upper legs, stretching out her muscles. She'd stripped off her legs and left her truncated knees bare, enjoying the cool air.
"I don't think I can open my mouth wide enough."
"Well, hazards of being married to my limp-dick brother." Her arms were too fast and long to dodge, so I resigned myself to the stinging slap she gave my arm. "Hey, I can't help it if you chose the shorter end of the stick. If you'd been a guy, I'd have been all over you."
"Well, then I dodged that bullet, didn't I?"
I playfully hissed at her as if the retort stung.
"You done eating? I've got head yelling planned, remember?"
"How about if you just, you know, start the screaming and I'll jump in to defend myself when I've got my mouth free?"
"Okay, start with the blood. What happened?"
I gave her a quick rundown, both of the case and what happened at the cafe. By the time I was done, we'd polished off half of the pizza and nearly a 6-pack of the root beer. I didn't have enough to build a connective picture, but it was worrisome enough, especially since I couldn't figure out why people were dying or how it was all connected to Madame Sun.
"Well, maybe it's not through her," I mulled.
Maddie stopped putting her legs together and looked at me.
"What do you mean?"
"Well, maybe it's not Sun they're targeting. Maybe it's Gyeong Si."
"Well, what about the girl tonight, the one who died? I mean, how is she connected to Gyeong Si?"
"Yeah, there's a flaw, but there's something there. I think he's tangled up in this as much as anyone else." I mulled the problem over. "Yeah, you need some lotion?"
"No, I'm good. Got some here, thanks."
She held up a yellow bottle. Slathering some on the ends of her legs, Maddie finally got to yelling at my head.
"Talk to me about Jay."
"Oh, here it comes." I rolled my eyes. "What has Mike told you?"
"He said you have your head up your ass and that you can't see anything but your own hemorrhoids."
She dug out a pair of white limb socks, shook them out and smoothed out their green woven openings. Maddie laid them on the couch and stared me down.
"So why don't you tell me what's going on in that stupid head of yours, and why you thought you should be standing out in the middle of a gunfight instead of asking Jay to take you back?"
"It wasn't a gunfight. It was more like a game of fish in a barrel. Whoever shot up the place knew Vivian Na was going to be there," I pointed out, "so they shot her."
"Hmm. I notice you've avoided talking about Jay Min."
"And I've noticed it's none of your business." I tried to look superior. But Maddie had the market cornered on that one. Years of prep school and a genetically provided aquiline nose definitely gave her an edge. I crumbled when her piercing gaze shot lasers down her razor-sharp bridge. He said he needs time. Well, he said that right after he said, get the fuck out because you've screwed up my life, but, you know, like Bobby said, I should cling to whatever piece of wood floats by or I'll drown.
So that's why you went out looking for murderers?
I went out looking for murderers because that's what I'm getting paid for.